All right. Good morning, everybody. This is, if I could get everybody's attention so that we can get our meeting started. I'm pulling up my agenda so that we can. We're going to move one or two things around, but while I'm getting myself all fully set, I'm going to have us go around the room and introduce ourselves so that we will know who all is here this morning. And so again, my name is Mary Beth Randall, and I am president of Guide Dog Users of California. And I'll pass the mic. my dog is Tennyson, a male yellow lab.
Good morning. I'm Debbie Flowers. I have Markham. He's a yellow lab as well, and he's from GDB, and I am a board member.
Good morning, everyone. I'm Pamela Metz. I am the secretary. I have a, he's almost had him a year. He's a male yellow lab named Kingston. He's from GDA.
Good morning. I'm Ken Metz, and sort of treasure. And so don't pick on me or you won't get any money. And I have some kind of a dog. She calls herself a black lab by the name of Maiden, and she is from GDB.
I'm Debbie Kessler, and I have Chaz from GDB.
I know, I'm Jerry.
Hi, I'm Nancy Unger. I'm a GDB board member. I have Nigel from Guide Dogs of the Desert. He's a four-year-old golden yellow lab cross. Thank you.
There you go.
Hi, I'm Katherine Johnson from Colorado. I have Nestle, and she is a five-year-old black lab from Guide Dogs America.
I'm Judy Wilkinson. I'm here with my brand new seeing eye dog, Carly. I've just had her 2 weeks. This is her first big trip, and she's my second.
There you go.
Good morning, everybody. My name is David Jackson. My dog's name is Rolo. He is a yellow lab, and he is now closing in on 4 years. He's such a wonderful dog. There you are.
Hi, I'm Joan Nelson. I live in San Diego. My guide dog is Franny, and it's my... she's trying to figure out where my voice is coming from. she's my first guide dog, and she's from Guide Dogs for the Blind, and she's 2.5.
Hello, I'm Jerry Arakawa with Yellow Lab Tova, who's from GDB, and 5.5 years old.
I'm Ann Kaiser, Sacramento. I'm here with 8-year-old female black lab Daytona from Guide Dogs for the Blind. I'm the immediate past president of GDC.
I'm Christy Crespin. I'm here with Caroline, 3-year-old labradoodle from Guide Dogs of the Desert.
I'm Ed Crespin, and I'm here with Vans on my feet.
Okay, that's everyone.
That's it.
All right. Well, thank you. It's good to have everybody here this morning. And just for everybody's knowledge, we're going to try to make sure that you get a microphone if you want to speak up about something, because the meeting is being recorded this morning. And so the next thing on our agenda is the reading and approving of minutes. And all of our board members hopefully got the agenda. I know Debbie had issues, so hopefully the rest of you got the okay as well.
Good morning. The minutes, the last meeting we had was, okay, you guys, just bear with me. I'm trying to pack. It was about 3 weeks ago. We discussed having a walk, and the reason why we didn't aren't having the walk right now is because of we didn't get the logistics of the hotel as far as going around the hotel and see what was on around, and could we get around the hotel with no issues outside.
Yes.
Well, I'm reading them in my head. We discussed, so we were going to look at doing the walk, and hopefully we can do the walk in the spring, at the spring convention. The walk would consist of taking a walk around the building once or twice with some getting some PR out there and getting our dogs and ourselves recognized as guide dog handlers. We discussed what we were going to sell at the this convention, and what are we selling? We have 50-50 raffle tickets right now. We have three wall hangings and membership. Membership dues are due. We were going to have a young man named Robert Wendt doing a skit for the luncheon, but he's going to do this skit in the spring. It's a skit. He does the voice of his wife's guide dog. And it's hilarious because he's named every dog that we know has a special name that he can't say. Like mine is Kingston is Sing Song because he can't say Kingston. So that will be in April. Lee was not on the call, but we got the information a little bit later. We'll have a speaker for luncheon, and we'll have our door prizes and a couple other things.
School updates.
We'll have school updates. That's in the program, right? Okay, and then the only other thing is that we're hopefully in the spring, we once Ken and I get settled, we're going to call and order some beds to sell in the spring at our table. And these beds are special because you could actually roll this bed up in a bag and carry this bed around with you. And you can throw it in a washing machine, wash it, shake it out, and it dries in an hour. So we're going to look into getting some of those. And also, one other thing is, I'm going to look into getting a doggy doctor bag. When Kingston got hurt in Access, I had won a doggy doctor's bag. And in this doctor bag is everything that we would have in our first aid kits. And ointments, everything. So it's a good thing to have. And Mary Beth adjourned the meeting.
Alrighty, thank you, Pam. Good job. Is there a motion to accept the minutes? Has any discussion? Oh, second. Any discussion? Then all those in favor of approving the minutes? Any against? Abstentions? Okay. Thank you very much, Pam. Ken, did you want to wait? Move me around?
I'll do that. Probably after our lunch, I'll do a real quick report. I just can't get it right.
Okay. So we're going to put off the treasurer's report. If the members will bear with us on that this morning. So then we will move on. Next thing we have would be a membership report, and I did not hear Pat LaFrance Wolf in the room. So just briefly, I guess I'll just say it's time for dues to be paid up. So if you can go to the booth and pay your dues, and we have some volunteers that are helping us out with the booth today and whatnot, so they can help take down your information and all that kind of good stuff. And then, of course, also you can get your dues mailed in to Ken, and then we will get you all taken care of for membership. So, yes, hold on.
I'll use that only because you're recording. I know the recorder could probably even hear me, but I just want to say that membership letters will go out right around the 1st of December. But just as a reminder, the membership is $20. And out of that, we get
I believe it's 10, I think 10 to GDUC. Is it 8 and 12 to GDUI? That's right, because of the ACB membership went up. And so the letters will get out. I'll give you the address as to where to mail it and everything else. And this time we will get everything organized. Actually, Pam was right. We are moving, so we're in the process of packing stuff. And so that's why I forgot the information on our treasury account to bring with me. So we didn't take the money, only the paper. I just want you to know that you didn't use it for the down payment, because even with a bad economy, you can't get a house for $3,000. So that's what we have, approximately $3,100. And I'll get an accurate report at lunch. Thank you.
Catherine Johnson from Colorado. I'm already a member of GDUI. If I wanted to rejoin GDUC, I've been a member in the past, how much would my dues be? Thank you.
Well, if you're not a life member of GDUI already, you would pay us the $20, and that'll take care of your dues for GDUI, CCB, ACB, and us. So there you go.
I already joined GDUI, and I'm a member of CCB, and I'm a member of ACB.
Madam Chair, Treasurer, I will notify GDUI of that. Okay, I'm sorry. I will notify GDUI of the fact that you've paid. Just, you know, when you pay, make mention, pay the 12,
eight.
Yeah, the $8 to us, and I'll mention the $12. Just tell them to mention that $12 has already been paid for the year to GDUI. What we're talking about, though, is dues for the year 2011. So if you haven't, anyone who pays here, if you've paid GDUI directly for some reason, there used to be a big conflict with that, because we would actually collect the money for both groups, GDUC and GDUI,
right.
And we used to have some mix-ups. And since you were in GDUC previously, you probably remember that.
Right.
But right now we have it all straight, hopefully, so that GDUI no longer sends out the letters
right.
to our people, because they know we're going to collect for them in California.
Okay.
So if you're paid up for GDUI, that's only through 2010, I imagine.
Right. So okay. How much would
so
I need
it will
to
be
pay
20.
You? 20. Okay.
Uh-huh.
Thanks. 2011.
For 2011.
Oh, okay. Okay. Thank you. Sorry to take the time.
No. Oh, no. Asking the question is perfectly a good thing. And actually, we're trying, both GDUI and all of those affiliates are trying to streamline things a little better, so that if people who are members in our state, we're trying to encourage people to pay their dues to us, and then we give the information to GDUI, so that we don't have duplication people making dues, paying their dues and things like that, and having to do a lot of back and forth between GDUI and the affiliates. Now, mind you, of course, you can pay your dues to even for our affiliate to GDUI, but then GDUI has to pay us back. So that's why they're trying to get people to streamline things as much as possible.
Madam Chairwoman,
go ahead.
Where is it we pay here again?
Our GDUC booth is up on the third floor in the exhibits.
Oh, okay.
We are in that first room. If you go to the right out of the elevators and go to those rooms around the corner, we're in that first room next to the people with the truncated domes and whatnot.
All right, thank you.
Yeah. I have one thing that I'd like to bring before the board for, we were getting pretty minimal donations for door prizes, so I went and purchased some toys to use as door prizes, and I would be able to pay for some of the expense, but I wanted to find out if I could get reimbursed for some of it, and I brought the receipt. it was like 50 cents, $58 and some change, but I would like to ask if the board would be willing to pay me back for that, or if necessary, I will take it as a donation.
Madam President, I would so move that we reimburse you for the toys that you bought. The purpose for all of our things is obviously to support GDUC and the work that it does. So I would move that we reimburse.
All right, first and a second. Any discussion? Okay, is there all those in favor?
Aye.
Anybody against? Abstentions? Okay, I will give you the proper amount, Ken, and we'll take care of that in due time. Okay, is there a motion then to accept the treasurer's report? Oh, well, I'm sorry.
I'll do it.
You're going at lunch. I'm sorry. Good morning. I need more coffee, obviously, or something. Then let's see. Next, I have the editor's report for forward. So is Lee out there to talk to us about that?
Lee?
Lee, yes. Lee Morton? Okay. Well, briefly, we just got forward emailed out to everybody, and that is pretty much how we're sending forward these days. So as you are renewing your dues and your email address, please, please make sure you give us your email address so that you will be assured to get your forward. And we are also taking things to put in forward. We need articles. So I don't care if you think it's silly, but we would love articles about your dog, whatever. So that would be most appreciated. Actually, I skipped legislation, a legislation report. I don't know who wanted to say anything, but Judy, but for everybody who may have gone to that meeting yesterday morning with the Access and Technology and Citizens with Low Vision, that really covered a lot of what's new in legislation for us as far as guide dog handlers and so on and so forth, because the new regulations came out just a month ago, and a little over a month ago, and regarding service animals and the new wording about service animals and so on. And that's probably one of the biggest things that's going on as far as legislation.
The bill in California passed
1491,
which you know, set new
1491 passed in California. Frank can, you know, clarify if I'm missing something here, but which, you know, clarifies how the licensing and training at home in California, that it now is allowable if the instructors are licensed in California. And that passed the legislature.
Yeah. So, yeah, well, there's been a little bit of stuff going on here in our state, and I know that the Guide Dog Board is making several changes to the language and so on and so forth of those in regards to how instructor training and so on and so forth as well. So there's quite a few things going on in that department as well. So, you know, it's, and we put quite a bit of information about a lot of the legislation that's been done in this most recent forward. So definitely take a look at that. And if you have any questions, you know, just feel free to, you know, call Judy, or I'll certainly do my best to help explain anything.
Madam President?
Yes.
I'm sorry, I hate to make them all run up for here. Thanks, I got it. I think we, well,
part of 1491 also had a lot to do with home training, which I think is going to be interesting. I happen to know someone who has received home training for his initial guide dog, and it was special circumstances. A, meal-wise, he was an Orthodox Jewish person who only ate kosher. That would have been hard for probably for Mrs. Price or whoever to do up there, at least at San Rafael, and probably for the other two schools. He also had a lot of issues with his diabetes and things, and he was it was much easier for him to deal with the home training in his local area. So there are some extenuating circumstances where even a first-timer now can do home training. I do think that at some point, whether it's now or in the spring, I think we need to have some discussion, at least I know I'd like to see this, some discussion regarding how we feel about folks who go to guide dog schools outside of California, and what happens if they need some assistance from a trainer from that school in regards to the fact that the State Board of Guide Dogs for the Blind would like us would like all those folks who come to California to help people, the board feels that they should have their license out here. And I think at some point we need a discussion. I you know, just don't feel that people who are getting dogs from Seeing Eye or Guiding Eyes or anything, if they have some issues with their dogs, and a lot of us need some help now and then to do some I'll call it reworking. I didn't want to call it retraining because it's really working out issues. And I just don't think that after 50 plus years of that board being in existence and never before asking schools outside of California to be licensed by California law, that we should be requiring that of them just so they can come out here and help one of our Californians who has a dog from an outside California school.
Yeah, that's definitely a very good point. And also, I believe it's in 2011 that
the sunset
of the guide dog board will be coming up. And so our position on how we're going to handle that is going to be very important. So yes, definitely it's, I know we've discussed this at a couple of meetings, and you know, I remember some of the feelings that you gave, but that would be important for us to make sure we do officially go on record with GDUC's opinion about that during the next year and whatnot. So, any further on that?
Okay, I was going to say, is it a money issue for the board, a way of getting some money?
I don't know, license money.
Yeah, so you know where it wasn't maybe as much an issue before, but it's just, hey, everybody's looking for additional ways to get money. And but I know they were considering, there's a lot of things that have been considered before about getting assistance for people who just need to work iron out an issue from out of state schools, and since they're all, you know, pretty well self-regulated, I don't find it an issue either that why we need to now. I think it's more a money issue on their part than it is, you know, any control thing. But because there'd been talk about calling in retired trainers from a particular area where the student resides and asking them to assist and stuff like that. So it just seems like a money issue. But yeah, it's a good discussion thing.
Thank you.
Yeah, definitely.
I want to go back. This is David Jackson. I want to go back to the bill that was passed, 1491. I think this is an outstanding consumer issue for us and for folks who may or may not want to go to a school for whatever extenuating circumstances. I think it allows people to pick and choose, and it also allows
flexibility with their work schedule. I really like the fact that this is happening and that the consumer now has a real voice in how they want to go about getting a guide. Thank you.
Thank you.
Yeah, I definitely agree with that. You know, I know that I have just a couple of minor concerns, but I know it's something that can be watched, and I know the schools will certainly be keeping an eye on it with some of the changes, because since they can now do home training for first-time handlers, if that's necessary or circumstances like Ken was talking about, it'll be kind of interesting to see how that goes. But overall, yes, it was a very nice piece of legislation. So it was good to see that get passed. Anything else as far as legislation goes? All right. Well, then let's move on to old business. Is there any old business? Good. new business. I actually have an item, and that's because for those of us that went to the president's dinner, there was a discussion that came up, and it sounds like Pam has an item. Chris Gray last night brought up that there's going to be a lot of changes in the way we are going to report things to the CCB. And affiliates are going to now be required for possibly some things having to pay a tax to CCB so that they can then in turn pay those taxes to our, you know, for our CCB, because CCB has to pay taxes on, you know, certain items. And so there's going to be a change in making sure that we fill out the form that we get from CCB out really detailed, that kind of thing. There are things that will be exempt, you know, things like selling candy bars, that kind of thing, I'm sure are going to be exempt. And I know that between Chris Gray and Peter Pardini and all that kind of stuff, that there will be people to help answer questions that any of us affiliates have as far as how to label items and list them and stuff like that. But it is something for all of us to know that this is going to happen. And it's not that they want for us to have to do it, but it helps to reimburse the CCB for what they have to pay for these, for those taxes and stuff. So if there's questions about that, I'm not really the person to ask about it very much, but I wanted to make sure I pass that information, and I can also give it to Pam and see what else she has.
I have a comment about that.
Chris also said, was it Chris?
Yes.
Yeah. Chris also said that an accountant would be looking at our items and our fundraising.
Fundraising
the fundraising items to determine whether or not they are taxable. So it's not like the CCB is just going to say, oh, well, you made money, so you're going to have to give us money. They are going to thoroughly investigate it. So,
Madam President?
It's my turn.
Oh, go ahead. You go first.
Oh, you're going to talk about this?
Yeah.
Oh, then you can go first.
Oh, see? I knew I could. I think obviously what I or anyone following me does later on as treasurer is going to have to do is realize what products we have to sell for our fundraiser and type of product. You know, we're just going to have, if we sell something $15, everything we do in that respect, we'll just have to take the basic California tax. I'm not going to end up trying to get a tax chart and keeping track of where each person lives. I refuse. But I think if we do an overall state tax of
whether it's 8.5% or 9%, I think we can do that. And if we claim that amount, then we should be okay. We're probably talking in the neighborhood of $500, even if it were $1,000 in a year, we'd probably be looking at $90 tax. I mean, so we're not really talking a huge amount, but it's certainly something that any treasurer from this point on after last night is going to have to keep some pretty good records. Your turn.
I appreciate it. Okay, this is something that I have been thinking about, and Mary Beth and all of us have discussed it. It's the dog walk. I have been thinking about this for 3 years. And the reason why I've been thinking about this is because I know myself, I don't like being in this hotel every day. And I know the dogs would love to get out in the fresh air and see and the rain and everything else and act like dogs for a change. Other thing I was thinking about to add to that, and I've discussed this also, having some type of contest to see who could walk the furthest or whose dog act the craziest, or see if we can get sponsored. I know I guess a few in here that could. And see if we could get sponsors for each category. Whose dog is the cutest? I know we all got cute dogs, but some of them are manly too. Okay, so but I was thinking about something along those lines for spring and October next year, because the one thing I want to see is GDUC grow, but also I want to see us getting more recognition as an affiliate of CCB. And we need to get ourselves out there to be recognized. And these dogs, I know Kingston and Maiden, when we're out working, Kingston gets, oh, he's a beautiful dog. Look at his face. He's gorgeous. And he gets all the time. And I don't get anything, but that's okay. But I was thinking about that because I think it's important that we get the recognition as an affiliate of CCB and help. As an affiliate of CCB, we can also help CCB get out there. So these are ideas I was thinking about. We'll get them discussed. And hopefully in the spring we can do this, or even if in the fall we can do this.
Yes, this is David Jackson again. I would, I want to go back to the tax issue. I would be optimistic about this. I would, I think you folks are probably doing this anyway. Just follow the California tax laws. I assume that you are documenting everything that you do anyway. Mm-hmm. I would be optimistic, and I agree with you, Ken. I don't think you're going to spend a whole lot of money on this.
Yeah.
So I would just relax.
Oh yeah.
And do what you are doing. And I think as time goes by, I think we're going to probably get more information as we go along.
Will you visit me at San Quentin?
Pardon me? Well, I mean, you're not going to go to San Quentin anyway. You're going to go to
Alcatraz.
No, you won't go to Alcatraz. But you'll go to a nice federal facility that will take care of you, Ken.
You're okay, dude.
excuse me. This is Debbie Flowers. What's his name? Chris did say that we would receive a statement at the end of the year.
Sure. Yeah.
So, I mean, I really don't think I have anything to worry about either.
Yeah, this is Mary Beth. No, I don't think we have anything to be concerned about. I think it's a valuable thing for people to know that this is happening. And, you know, most affiliates and chapters, if we're doing a good job like we already do of keeping track of your items and all of that sort of thing, it'll be really easy. But if you're somebody that does worry about this, don't worry. We have lots of people sure that it all gets done. And, you know, it's not like we're going to have anything to be concerned about. And certainly, you know, Chris and Peter and the office and everything are going to help get us through this process as we're, you know, making the different changes that we're making. So, you know, it'll just be a matter of smoothing things out as we transition to this, and I don't think it's going to be any big issue down the road here. So, but I do feel it's important for the membership to know, and just for people to be aware of, and all that kind of good stuff. So, is there any other questions regarding either of those topics? Okay, then the last big thing on our agenda is nomination report and elections. Is Jerry, okay, can we get a mic to Jerry so he can give us a nominating report?
Okay, thank you, Madam President. Nominating committee has been pretty active in terms of yearly elections. For those of you who don't know, the Constitution, GDUC Constitution, provides that this particular year, the office of vice president will be available. I happen to be serving as vice president, but I'm terming out. And the office of treasurer is available for nomination, as well as one board seat. And I believe, and Debbie, you can correct me if I'm wrong, I believe that you termed out as well. Is that right? Or
I think so. I've been a member of the board members for a term and a half.
Yeah, that's what I thought. So what's the nominating committee, and I want to certainly thank Pam Metz and for her assistance as well. We have myself and Pam. We've been working. Yeah. Also, Dan was, but he's also getting a dog, so he's not here. Dan Kaiser.
I'm just for my minutes or not my notes. Who are the members of the nominating committee?
Myself. That's Jerry Arakawa, Pam Metz, and Dan Kaiser.
And the three of you met to talk about.
Yeah, we've spoken at various times. So what we have come up with for the office of vice president, the nominating committee has recommended Pam Metz, and for office of treasurer, the nominating committee has nominated or recommends rather Ken Metz to continue as treasurer. And what we will do for the open board seat, we won't have any recommendation at this point, but we'll invite nominations from the floor for the open board seat. And that's my report at this point.
Okay. Let's see, so secretary wasn't up.
If in fact we elect Pam as vice president, wouldn't we then need to have a secretary?
Yes, that's correct.
No, but I'm just asking so they would, to finish out.
Yes, okay. Yes, that's correct. Okay. Any other questions of Jerry before we move on? Okay, then we will start elections, and I will open. Are there any nominations for first vice president? We have the name of Pam Metz as recommended by the nominating committee. Any other nominations? Any other nominations? And any other nominations? Okay, I've heard move to be closed, and Pam accepted it by acclamation. Congratulations, Pam.
Thank you very much. I appreciate it.
Pam's, thank you very much. All right. Thank you very much.
Appreciate it.
All right. Next on the slate is treasurer, and the nominating report recommended Ken Metz. Is there any other nominations?
I hope.
Is there any other nominations? Are there any other nominations?
Second.
Okay. Nominations are voted to be closed, and Ken accepted as by acclamation. All those in favor?
Aye.
All right. Congratulations, Ken. Oh, opposed?
Me.
Abstentions. Okay, Chen, you've got the job again for 2 years. Okay, so next, because Pam Metz was elected as first vice president, we now need to elect a new secretary. So I open the floor to nominations.
Madam President, I would like to nominate Jerry Arakawa.
Do you want to hand this down to
Ken? No, that's what I'm going to do.
Oh. Great, you think alike.
We were thinking this.
Okay. Jerry, do you accept?
Yes.
Yes, good job.
My Tibetan meditation.
All right. Are there any nominations? Any nominations? And one more time, any nominations? Okay. Nominations have been moved to be closed and seconded by all those in favor of accepting Jerry Arakawa as secretary by acclamation. Say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Abstentions? Okay. Congratulations, Jerry.
Thank
you,
Jerry.
Yay.
Well, thank you very much. You've got 1 year to squeeze me out.
1 year to squeeze. Okay. The last position for the our open board seat. And I will open the floor to nominations. Are there any nominations? And I have one. The name of Paula Barton was brought to me, and she was spoken to and will accept the nomination. She just was not able to come to convention, but she would love to it. She loves coming to conventions.
Madam President?
Yes.
I would like to nominate David Jackson.
All right. Are there any other nominations? Any other nominations? Any other nominations? Is there a motion for closing nominations? Okay. All right. We have the two individuals. Well, let's see. For Paula Barton, I guess I'll speak. What's that? Yeah, that's another thing. Are you guys willing to help?
I'm signed out.
Okay. Great. So we'll have our couple of side volunteers and just to count votes, and that's all we need you to do. We usually allow for the people to have someone to speak. I can certainly speak for Paula Barton if there's anyone willing to speak with me. We'll do no more than 5 minutes, and so if we could get somebody who can keep time, that would be good.
I'll be your time.
Okay, and David, do you have somebody to speak for you?
I'll speak for
you. Would you speak for me, please?
Sure.
Okay.
Thank you so much.
Okay, let's see, if you're ready to take time, then I'll let me know when you're ready.
I'm ready.
Well, I can tell you quite a bit about Paula. Paula's a guide handler. Something unique about her is she's a lady who uses a wheelchair, and so she has a wheelchair guide, and so she has a couple of other disabilities, but for a long time, Paula has been in several jobs, many jobs as secretaries, working in offices in our local area where we live in Fresno. She has been a member of our chapter now for 3 years and has actually been our secretary for the last two. And, oh, I take it back, it's been longer because she served two terms. So she's been a member for 5 years and has served for the last 4 years. And she's done a very good job with that job, and she really wants to serve CCB and GDUC and help out as much as possible. And I feel that she would be a great member for getting active and involved in our affiliate. And so if you would consider voting for her, I'd appreciate that. Thank you very much. And I'll give it over to David Speakers. Who's going to be first?
David Jackson has been an active member of the CCB for a long time and has always been right there to do whatever he's been asked to do. He's been active in his chapter in San Francisco and has taken any position that has been offered to him to prove that he's an extremely flexible person and that he can think very quickly to be able to handle whatever he is doing at that time. It was recently that David got a guide dog. I believe it was 2 years ago now. And when I first heard he was going to go, I was totally surprised that he was going to do that. But I believe that part of the reason also was that the limited vision he had gotten even worse. And he's really done extremely well with his guide dog. David has been involved here with GDU. See, I didn't call it Good Duck. Until now. David's been involved in GDUC, and he's always been able to ask questions that were pertinent to the discussions we were having. David can think quickly and ask a lot of questions, as we know from his belonging to the board of directors of CCB. And David is always, as I said, willing and very capable of taking the responsibility that he should be giving and giving opinions that are extremely relative to whatever the situation is. So I really hope you'll consider voting for David Jackson for board member of GDUC. Thank you.
Okay, well then, the way we'll handle this, we'll do this by a show of hands, and our decided volunteers will count the votes, and you can tell me the count after we vote on both people. So, show of hands for all those that wish to vote for Paula Barton as board member. And you can just say you're done or whatever. Okay, then all those, raise your hand if you want to vote for David Jackson. Okay, you can put your arms down. Okay, well, David got the majority of the vote. What were the actual numbers?
12 to 1.
12 to 1. David. All right. Very good. And David, we are very happy that you're here on the board. You are a very active member of CCB, so we're very happy to have you aboard. And
I feel incredibly honored. Thank you so much. I really do. I appreciate this. And Ken is very correct. If there's something that needs to happen, I can get that done. I really appreciate that. Thank you so much. Thank you.
All right. Well, there's only one more thing that we need to vote on. We need to vote on delegate and alternate delegate for the CCB for the year 2011. And so I will open nominations for delegate. And yes.
I renominate Ann to serve another
term. Okay, Ann Kaiser has been nominated. Are there any other nominations? Okay.
Second.
It's been moved and seconded that nominations be closed and Ann accepted by acclamation. All those in favor?
Aye.
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 Okay. Anybody against?
One of the reasons I nominated Ann, and this is not official policy, but it's something I'm sort of campaigning for on a one-person big mouth, affiliate by affiliate. In a statewide affiliate, I think it's really excellent when the delegate represents her state by dividing the vote appropriately when there are votes from the floor that reflect the statewide variety in the affiliate. Thank you.
Yeah, thank you very much.
I have a question, Madam.
Go ahead.
I was wondering how long you have to be off the board in order to be elected back to the board.
As not to my knowledge, right off the top of my head, that there is no time period that you need to be off the board to be elected back onto the board.
No, there's certainly a term limit.
Yeah,
there's a term limit as far as how long you can serve on the board.
Actually, that was answered last. That was answered last night. Yeah.
Oh, was it?
What Roger Peterson said last night as parliamentarian regarding the CCB board with the elections was that the person, if they've served in that, I think it had to do with Peter, as a matter of fact, because he was treasurer before, he would have had one more term. And correct me if I'm wrong, Judy, but I think what Roger said was that Peter could only serve one term.
I don't know, but it's just logical that there are term limits, like 6 years. But if you're off a term and get reelected for another 6 years.
Yeah.
Okay.
I think, Ken, being a board member, I think I can serve 4 consecutive times, but then if I'm off, I have to be off for a term.
Because I wasn't sure what Roger was referring to.
And just for the record, Davidson was saying that he, as a board member, he can serve 4 consecutive times, and that he needs to be off for a term before he would be able to be elected again.
Oh, I don't have a problem.
And you know what? It would be something that I personally would need to look up in our Constitution.
And I think we need to. We're a small affiliate. We'd run out of people if we really did that. So. When I say small, I mean there aren't that many active members that would really take those positions, and we'd be in we'd have a real difficulty then.
Certainly, we could ask Roger about that. He would know by then.
Yeah. Okay, you know what? I will have to consult. You know, and actually, what I'll do, I'll do this as an article since this was brought up as a discussion. To look up what the section is regarding that, any sections on that in our Constitution, and put out information on that, because since it would take a little bit to echo through our Constitution right here, then actually maybe I'll even look at while we're doing our program and see what we can figure out before the lunch. Okay, I have it. So maybe we can figure it out. Okay.
Thank you, Madam Chair, Madam Chairman.
All right. Ken, you had a question?
No.
Oh, okay.
That was it.
All right. Okay, we still need to vote for alternate delegate, and so I will open nominations for.
I'd like to make a nomination.
Okay.
I would like to nominate Mary Beth.
Second.
Okay. Is there any other nominations?
Yes, Madam
President. I would like to, in spirit of inclusion and everything else, even though I'm not very well acquainted with this individual, I'm impressed with what I know, I would nominate Paula Barton.
Okay. Are there other nominations? Are there any other nominations? And any other nominations? I heard that nominations have been moved to be closed. Second? Okay, second. Okay, then I don't really want to talk. Let's just vote, if everybody's okay with that.
Technically, you cannot, I think.
Oh. Would that also apply for alternate delegate? Okay, then Jerry is vice president currently, so then Jerry will need to run the election for this.
Okay, very well. We will have the same procedure that we had for previous elections. So if our vote tally person is ready, all those who are in favor of Paula Barton, raise your hand, please. And then the vote counter, if you could let us know when to lower our hands.
Go ahead.
Okay. All those vote for Mary Beth Randall, raise your hand.
Okay. All right.
And then, okay. If you could whisper the tally to me, please. Okay, very good, and congratulations to Mary Beth Randall.
All right.
All right, well, thank you. I agree with that vote. I don't know who we need to talk to, but we will see what we can do to get less air conditioning, because we're going to be in here until 1 o'clock. Okay, with elections over, the last thing on the agenda is any other business that anyone would like to bring up.
Madam President.
Yes, I'll send the mic to Ken.
Oh, okay. Either. Thank you. I know we talked a little bit about fundraising. I will see if I can bring it down at lunch. There is Pampered Chef has things that, you know, they have folks just like Tupperware that could do house parties and all that.
The dogs
and,
like if you bring the bowl down.
And yeah, the dogs might think if I bring the bowl, they're going to eat. But they have a collapsible bowl. You know, we've talked about these types of bowls for a long time, and the air conditioner just went off.
Thank you.
Someone found the thermostat. See? Very good. Person is now another new board member. Anyway, these bowls are rubberized. They're collapsible. They come in three sizes, depending whether you have a St. Bernard guide dog, a lab, or a chihuahua. That's for a blind midget. Or can I use that term? I don't know. But I did anyway. I'm sorry, sightless midget. I know that. I've never been politically correct. But these bowls really do collapse, and they do have, I mean, seriously, they have, I think it's 3-quart, 2-quart, and 1-quart bowls. And they're really neat. They almost fold down when you collapse them. They're about the size of a Frisbee. I mean, they're almost that flat. And they hold up, and as I say, I can bring one to show you. And my point is not to have a Pampered Chef party. We do have someone that usually comes to our conventions, and I was going to see, you know, after you see it, if we're interested in that as a fundraiser, I can ask the rep or myself, contact Pat Chef to see if they would reduce the price if we're going to sell several of those. But there, it's a salad bowl, and it's collapsible. What's neat is with the rubberized bottom, if you have the bowl on the floor like we have here, you know, in the hotel or your kitchen floor, these bowls will not slide.
We actually have one. But
we have two of them upstairs.
Yeah.
I mean, to my trouble, the classical bowl, I want them to dry. They what?
Okay, she's wanting something that's not expensive.
Actually, they do, because what I do is before I wash it, after they're through, I actually collapse it, and that way I can go ahead and get the water all over, and it's even easier to dry because it's flat. So you don't have to reach inside and dry the whole thing. You can do it all at once when it's flat. So I'll bring it to show. They're, right now, I think they were like $20 each. So I'm not saying that they're at this, maybe even more. I don't recall.
They were 20.
But I'm not saying that. I want to see if we can get in touch with them and get Pampered Chef to perhaps, give us 50 of them or something like that to sell and see what kind of price we could get. Yes.
Are you going to bring it to the lunch?
I will.
We have to cover our dog.
Now, that's not to put your lunch in. I need it back for the dog. I'm kidding.
Mr. Chairman? Yeah. Madam Chairman, I'm sorry. This is Judy.
Yes, Judy.
You know, I actually have found a pack of three disposable bowls that are little plastic bowls that fit perfectly fine on the floor. You use them a few times and you throw them away, and they dry almost instantly. The trouble is they're from a supplier that'll only sell to pet stores, and I thought I could get them as an individual because another friend had got these. But I'm thinking we might want to find something like that as a fundraiser. Lots of blind people need disposable bowls that are, they can put in a pocket, not, you know, like for when you're out walking or, you know, you're taking an airplane trip. So it seems to me, rather than, you know, I understand what you're talking about, but I'm, you know, I know I would also be interested in something that's just disposable that I can throw away after a few times.
Judy, do you know the company?
Yeah, I do. They need you to be a business to buy from them.
Well,
I could talk to you about this.
Yeah, let's talk about it, because a few years ago, just as an example.
For instance, you can get a 3-pack of these little bowls for $1.60 from the wholesaler. And then
we could sell them for $3, $4.
Exactly.
But let me say, a few years ago, we were selling these little collar tags and things like that. They had angels and stuff on them. And this company sold to Hallmark, and I did talk to them, and we actually ended up buying about $1,000 worth here. And we finally, you know, did get rid of all of them. We did sell them. So they did sell to us in quantity when I talked to them about doing it as a fundraiser, so that they knew we weren't going into competition with their other
I've got the old number
people.
And everything, so
okay.
Let's talk after.
Yeah. All right.
Look, both of them got a mic.
Madam President.
Judy and I know each other for a few years.
Hi. Madam President, this is Nancy Unger. I don't want to bring this up, but I feel I should. There have been I've been out many times with my dog, and a few people aren't picking up.
Yeah.
And I've stepped in it twice. My friend over here stepped in it twice.
Nope.
And I think people are not picking up. They need to learn, you know, to, if they can't pick it up, find someone to help them or whatever. Thank you.
Madam President?
One second. Okay, we got two questions.
Yeah, I have a question.
Yeah.
This is Charlene Nelson. Actually, I don't have a question. I have an idea for something to sell. I was at the San Diego Fair and found a LED collar for the dogs, and it lights up. And it has either eddy, slow flash, or rapid flash. It's charged off of your USB port on your ear.
Oh, interesting.
They were reasonable. For a large collar, it was $20. I do have the contact information for the lady, you know, for the people who are selling them. It's a smaller, kind of small company. But I do have the contact information. But having a black dog in the dark, this is absolutely marvelous. The interesting thing is there's green ones and some kind of a bluish color LED, the what they use for white light. Mm-hmm. And the lady said the green ones showed up better. Well, I went down an aisle in the exhibit hall and at them at a distance, and she's right. I was surprised. You'd think the green would not show up, but they do, a lot brighter than the white does. And they're really marvelous, and I have mine with me if people want to see it, but they really work good, and it's easy to operate.
Hi, Catherine from Colorado. Can we get the contact information for those callers if we want to order one when we get home? Thank you.
We can look at all these possibilities, and I'll talk with both Judy and Charlene, and also with Pampered Chef, and we'll throw all of these out. We'll see if we can, if we can get small enough quantities. I have to see what the companies will do in quantity, what they want us, what they would require us to, I should say. If it's reasonable and they'll start out with some small quantities to see how things sell, we can do that. We've also talked before about the doggy first aid kits. So we have a lot of things to do and that we can do. Unfortunately, when we used to have $6,000-$8,000 in the treasury, it was easier, and we're right around $3,000 or $3,200. So when we're doing that, it all depends how much outlay we want to have and how much we can really afford to do. But we're going to look at it, because we need to bring the treasury back up.
Will that be in court?
Yes. I'll write an article either.
I like Judy's idea, and I also did, because I think that's a good idea, throwaway bowls. I think all great ideas, and it would be something, all of them to be something to look into. Now, the doggy first aid kit, I think that's cute, because it looks like a doctor's bag. And it snaps open, and it has everything in it, everything. The other thing with the collapsible bowls is, when Ken and I travel, I just put them in the front pocket of the suitcase, and I'm done with them. And when I pull them out, these two down there know it's time to eat when they see those two bowls. And I think Judy's idea is great. And the flashing light, oh Jesus, when we go out walking at night, that come in handy. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So, yeah.
So would a taser, but
depends on who we're tasing. Mr. Vice President,
we'll get hands up.
Yeah, this is off the topic of fundraising, unfortunately, but maybe Charlene or any of the San Diego folks that are here, if any others are here, can tell me, do we have any puppy club presence out there at all? Because I haven't run into any of them since we've been here. So I don't know if we even have any volunteers out doing the cleanup. I mean, I'm not taking away from the fact that, yes, people should be picking up, but I don't think we have any volunteers out there doing it.
The hotel staff has been very kind.
Oh, they've been awesome. But, where's our usual puppy club presence?
Did we contact?
Yes, they were contacted, but I don't know what their schedule
is. Mr. Vice President?
Ken?
We need to really do our best to find people when we have our conventions, because I personally think that shouldn't be the hotel staff's responsibility. They don't get paid for picking up.
It's doo-doo.
Oh, doo-doo. I'm sorry. I know the other word, too. But
why don't you say it?
I didn't want to say caca. So
we have all kinds of words.
You know, it's funny, because you could talk about dog poop and everything else, and we do that all the time when we're getting our dogs when we're at a school, and then if you do it somewhere else, people, ooh, but man, we're so used to it. But the point is, it really shouldn't be hotel staff responsibility, and I think we need to really put an effort in. Even if it is not a puppy raiser group, then we also need to look at if there are other groups that do that type of work. We have in places where we had, I think it was Wagon Tails before, and I forgot the other names, but there are a few places that do that in different areas. So I think we have to pay for some of that stuff. Well, I mean, there are lots of places to ask. Absolutely. So I just think we need to really plan that part better.
Yes. One second.
Houston, someone seeks the microphone.
Yeah, I've got Judy Wilkinson. Do we, of course we're going to have a courtesy resolution for the hotel, but do we want another courtesy resolution specifically from our organization thanking?
I'm not sure we would need that.
Yeah.
Maybe we don't need an extra one, but maybe we can ask in the courtesy resolution for the hotel to mention, and whereas they've been especially helpful with the dogs.
Well,
is there someone? Is
well,
Frank
typically
still here?
We haven't done that because it's a general resolution about their. I'm a little uncomfortable about putting that kind of thing in the resolution because it really reflects poorly on our membership that we're not doing that.
Yeah. Okay.
I would though recommend that at one of your next general sessions you make a reminder.
Oh yeah. Well,
we'll do that this afternoon. I have a mic present most of the time if I need it.
Yeah, that's.
I know I'm shy and bashful.
Catherine Johnson, Colorado. What I meant by my other comment was that when. As this handler's act we picked up, if we stepped in some dew and there were hotel staff out there, we pointed it out to them and they went and picked it up and it wasn't our dew, it was somebody else that had left it. Thank you.
Yeah, you're not the only dog in the hotel. This hotel's pet friendly, so they left.
Okay. Well, a general, that is good to know. All right. Making a general announcement will not hurt, though. And so.
Did you know there are guide dogs?
Yes, exactly. All right. Is there anything else? Because we do kind of want to make sure we close up and take a little break. Okay, then is there a motion to adjourn?
So moved.
So moved, all right. Then the board meeting for the fall convention is closed. Okay, can I get everybody's attention, please?
Hi, Jerry.
Hello.
All right, but we're here.
You guys are late.
All right, hey, well, welcome. Yeah, we're getting a little late start here, but we've gone from, unless there's somebody that's supposed to be talking to us from the bus company about trolleys.
So I will give you the introduction here. The bus company is coming with a schedule for the luncheon.
Yes. Okay, but the other person.
On the trolley, I'm going to come up and do the introduction. I know.
Okay. So, because we're going to just then move on to Plan C. Welcome, of course, first of all, welcome to everybody. We are going to move on to kind of Plan C, though, this morning for the morning program and have the schools give any updates that they would like to give. And we'll. Oh, okay. And then I'll let Lee do her thing as well. So.
Hello, everyone. Okay, sorry, I was, as far as the report with forward goes, thank you for, when you send me good stuff, it comes out. When you don't, it won't. So keep sending me all the good, interesting articles. But I will apologize for leaving the board contact information out. there's always something you forget. So I will just send that to everybody. But anyway, I'm sure all of you, it's GLEK99@earthlink.net. And now I'll switch on to the subject that we're going to talk about. All of you, if you're on any kind of a list like GDUI or GD Lounge or Seeing Eye list, I'm sure GDA has one too, you know, whatever corresponding school you're from, you've heard about this story. There was a lady in Vancouver who was getting on a light rail, and her dog either didn't make it on the light rail or got knocked away from her. And the door shut. They didn't find the emergency buttons, and of course the dog got dragged along the trolley. And the dog did live. She was, but she had $15,000 worth of vet bills. Thank God the people did send in donations. And, you know, who knows? She is home now. Her name, the dog is a yellow lab named Palm. She happened to be from Guide Dogs for the Blind, but this could have happened at any school. This reporter has done several articles. It turns out there was a close call with a gentleman who had a golden retriever a few years ago. And so this has happened before. I have asked Charlene Ornelas to come speak to us because she has been very active on committees, access committees involving our San Diego trolley. She has been involved in the last three designs of the cars, and she has actually put in features to help make the guide dogs safer. Like, for a long time, sometimes our dogs, some of us who had littler dogs at the time, our dogs were getting caught in the doors, and we found that the beam was too low, so she fixed that problem. She's put in some safety features. There are some things our trolley has, and what I'm hoping is that you can take some of this information back to your areas and make your light rail safer. Or just maybe there are some things you do as dog users to be savvy and be alert. So I'm going to turn it over to Charlene. She has been on the access committees since 1985, so she definitely knows her stuff. And when I called Raleigh, they just didn't even say they could. They said, Charlene's your best resource. She's better than anyone we could send. So I will turn it over to Charlene Ornelas.
The only reason I wasn't on the first cars was I wasn't available for it because I wasn't in San Diego yet, and my husband was, so he passed it on to me. The trolleys originally, at least talking about, is our second generation of our procurement of trolleys, and they have a they're a regular stairwell to get into them. And they do not have the retractable stair. We have them numbered as 2,000 cars. There's different brands to our model numbers, and I never keep them straight. So I'm just going to say the 1,000, 2,000, 3,000, and we're about to get 4,000 cars. Each procurement starts with a different letter or number. And as she was saying, it started out, the dogs were kind of like in jeopardy, and it turns out little kids were too, because the beams were at 23 inches, and it was an easy thing to solve. They directed it down to 18 inches. It's just a sensor, a light sensor that they have, or a light beam, and they can direct it. And so it was something that didn't have to go to the manufacturer or anything else. Their own mechanics in the yard could adjust those, and they adjusted them so they point down, receive it at 18 inches that would interrupt them. Our trolleys have a couple of features, depending on the style of the car, that will lock the brakes on the trolleys. And they come from Siemens, which is the main manufacturer of most of the cars that are out on the market. If they have a retractable stair and you hear the step coming out, if you stand on that stair, that trolley goes nowhere until you stand off of the stair. If you get the 2000 series cars, the one with the stairwell and no retractable stair, you stand on the bottom step. That is where that light beam is, just as an extra safety. I stand there, and if the door senses anything, they will not shut. And I usually lean against the door to help them. Now, it started out that our doors were shutting hard enough to knock a person, and we adjusted the tension or the level on that. And again, that was something that the trolley company themselves, their own mechanics, could adjust, so that the shutting was not that bad. I actually got one of the people from the trolley to stand in the doorway and let it shut on them, and it almost knocked the guy over. And that put my point through very nicely. I had to say no more. The newest cars are low floor, and for people with those, it's going to be a little confusing on them if you're not used to them. What happens is there's two buttons. One is on the doors, and if you push that button, the door simply opens. That means there's a little bit of a step from the platform into the trolley. Now, we have
a multi-use system here. In other words, the trolleys run on the same tracks as freight trains on two of our lines, the orange line and the blue line. The green line's not affected by most of it. It is in one small area. So we cannot go to a level entry. So what happens is there's to the right of the door on the current 3000 series cars is another button that deploys the plate, the ramp, bridge, whatever they want to call it. If the door is opened by the first button, the one on the door, that plate doesn't come out. If you push the one on the side, the doors will shut, don't panic, and the plate will come out because it has to come before the doors open. Then the doors open. Now, as long as I'm on that plate, I've locked the trolley. They cannot move it physically. It's a safety. In San Diego, we have three sizes of cars. We have three lengths of cars. ADA says there will be a indicator for the doors. Well, if you've got three doors in three different locations, some of times there aren't any doors. If it's a one-car train coming through and you're standing for the second car or the third car, good luck. So what we've said is the only thing that we can control is the second door of the first car. Therefore, the rubber mats are lined up for that. Whether they be the orange line and the blue line, which makes them separate from the wheelchair area, which is a painted area, so people who are blind and use wheelchairs have a problem, and I'm trying to get them to make it textured. Have not succeeded yet, but I don't give up. They know that. But if it's the new on the green line where the car doors are together, then they will park in front of, and they're side by side, they will still park in front of the mat. So if a blind person or a person is, even if they're not having a cane or a dog, the rule is if there's a person on the mat, you line up the second door of the first car with the mat. Now there's two reasons for doing that. The farther down the car you go, the less likely the driver is to really see what's going on. They have what's called a fisheye, which for drivers who know it, it kind of shows you what it is, but it's this bubbly thing and it's out of proportion. So they really don't have detail. When you are at the first car on that mat, the drivers can actually see you and see what's going on. Now, the cars also have two ways to open the door. One is if I push the button, and the second one is the driver can actually operate the doors. He can decide when they open and decide when they shut. A lot of times, if you're on the mat, the driver will go ahead and open up the door. It's not a guarantee, but they're supposed, you know, they can do it that way. But as long as you are either on the plate, on the retractable stair, or in the doorway, the trolley cannot move. They can gun it all they want. It will not move. Now, when I board buses, a lot of times I will work my dog on and off. That's my personal preference. When I use a trolley, I will work the dog to door. Wait. When the door opens, I will step up onto the stair that retracted the lock part of the system, whichever car it is, let my dog pass next to me and get inside, and then I follow the dog inside. When I exit, I tell my dog to wait. I step down and step on that area, either the bottom step, the retractable stair, or the plate, and then tell my dog to come, let her pass beyond me. Then I get off the step and pick up the harness and walk off. I also keep a leash on short leash and keep a good grip on it. One of the advantages of the mats is they're intended for blind people. And we know that. So if I find other people standing on the mat, and I get a little suspicious what they are, if they say no, I will tell them this mat is for people who are blind or need extra time to get onto a trolley. I board first. I do not let people in front of me. You're not going to get between me and the door if I can do anything about it. I'm going to stand right there. My arm's going to be there. And I'm blocking. I'm just a little assertive about it. I will block that door. You do not push between me, and you're not going to be bugging my dog. When we get on the trolleys, is that so that the first seats right to the right of the door are the AA seating on all of our cars. So with a few precautions, one, always keep your dog on short leash when you're boarding trolleys. Two, keep a good grip on that leash. Three, step on the mechanism that will lock that trolley. And four, make sure your dog is the first one in or the first one out and you're the last. And I have an agreement with my dog. I take care of her because she takes care of me. So if something's going to happen, I'm going to take it on. If it, you know, I'll take the door if it's going to shut. I don't want to shut in on my dog. Now, when I ride the buses, I know people have had troubles also with paratransit, the dog sliding. The schools teach the dogs to sit. Well, gee, if they hit the brakes real hard, the dogs lunge forward, they lose their balance, and they slide, or they can be sliding around. I've taught my dogs, because I don't want them stepped on, and people, the last thing they're thinking of getting on a bus is that there's going to be a dog somewhere. So what I do is I try to sit in the first cross bench. And you can't force anybody to leave, but I have been known to tell people, I need this seat. Now, if they say, no, I don't have any. But if you go, would you please move? They're going, no, and I'm going, too bad. No. I also have a second thing that I do, and I don't stop my dog from getting in there. If my dog goes and sits there because she's used to that's where we go, I don't stop her. I could, but I don't. Unless I really see it, because I see a little bit. If I figure it's a really an old person, I'll stop her. But if it's somebody who I figure really could get up and move, I'll just let her go sit in there on her feet. And they go, oh, do you want to sit here? And I go, yeah, thank you. It works real well. But I do say, I need this seat. And people, a lot of the people in the front seats are young people, capable people of going to the back of the bus or somewhere else. They can get up and move. It's not very often that I'm moving somebody who I went, oh, shoot, it's somebody with a disability, oh, well. But that way the dog is farther out of the aisle. When they're sitting on a bus, the face of your dog is right at the right level for all the purses, bags, strollers, and everything else that's coming on. The people aren't being aware of your dog. So I tell my dog, down and under. So my dog is laying down. I get my feet, her between my feet, so that if the bus is one of these or has a driver that really wants to hit the brakes and hit the gas and you're lurching all over, I now can squeeze my legs together because of her hind legs, she won't slide through. And I can keep my dog on the ground between my feet and not sliding around. And that's one of the reasons I tell people I need this spot, because I need it in order to keep my dog safe. They can have other seats and other choices, but that is my prime spot. The other one that works real well is the first the first seats, which are the length, you know, go the length of the bus. The problem is on some of those there's a bracket. Now my dogs have learned that if I tell them to go under a table, a seat, and when I first get them, I put them there if they don't do it. I maneuver them and get them under. So they learn that I'm going to do that. So if they're smart, they're going to do it on their own because I have been known to try, you know, because I really don't see all the time and can't see a lot of things. And I've been known to try to put my dogs through table legs. The brackets under the seats are sometimes awkward. If you can sit the second or third seat, not right next to that, on the low floor buses, that big bulge or whatever they want to call that, is a wheel well of some sort. If you don't sit next to that, that's where that bracket is for tying down a wheelchair. If I sit in the third seat, then she can still be out from out of the way and fit. But my dog learns to get under the seat. She does it really well. And yes, it takes a while. Just like in the beginning of getting your dog home, when you do something, if you want them under the table when you're eating or whatever at a restaurant, it takes time to remind the dog that I'm going to tell you where you're going to go and you're going to do it. And it takes persistence. and I can outlast the dog. And it's for her own safety, and down the line, I don't have to do so much maneuvering. She just knows it's going to happen, so therefore, do it. So that's basically the ways that we have on our cars. They're the same. Our cars are similar to the ones in Sacramento, but there's 16 points that are different. I don't remember all 16 are, but I did do a paper one time on them and submitted it to San Diego Trolley, and we redesigned the cars. And the last generation, what we did, if nobody's done it in their areas, I actually got to go to Siemens. It was fun. They had different cars there. There was a Portland car and a Houston car, and ours were going to be like the Houston ones. Well, ours ended up being their own design before I got through. What happened was the Portland car and the Houston car both had what they call stanchions, those upright poles, by both doors. Yeah. Well, that made sense. You're supposed to have a door with 4 feet clear space for a wheelchair to turn. Where do you find that? Also, so that if a person goes in and you can't see, there's something for you to run into. How lovely. If the cane's on the wrong side, too bad. The dogs at least will get you around the pole. Portland had a yellow cautionary pole, and it had three handles on it. I went, cool. I said, do. You take out the pole by the wheelchair entrance door, the one with the plate. Only that door has the plate on both sides. And then you put that lovely yellow one with three handles at the other end of the car by the other door. That way, you don't lose any people standing, because you actually gain three if you do the old bit with a ball bat, you know, three hands, or the last hand has to go. Well, you can only get so many hands on a upright pole. So that gives you three times the standing in, you know, the single space. Now, to make it more detectable for people, I got them a little upset, and I said, okay, now we need something on the floor. And I got them to put a disc of contrasting texture on the floor that is the circumference, covers the circumference of the handles and the pole of the stanchion. So when you come in with a cane, if you hit that thing, it's a different texture. So when you hit something, you should know. The guide dogs will miss it, and you're on your way. And it's out of the way for most people if you use the door with that second door. So we get it out of there with the second door, and, you know, those who want to deal with it can, because you can board out of any car, any door. The advantage of the low floor ones, and what San Diego's doing is we're raising the platform 2 inches. We're making 8-inch platforms. And right now, San Diego is in the process of redoing most of their platforms, especially the South Bay line, because that was the original one. And so I am asking them to make sure that they have people there to assist with directing individuals as they go through the reconstruction phases to get, because they'll have shuttle buses that will get you from one point to the next connection for a trolley. But it's been fun. I've had some interesting times with them. They kept telling me you can't do it, and I kept saying, who's buying them? When they said, we are, and I said, well, then tell them we want it this way, because that's what we need. And if you aren't, you're non-client on some of this stuff. It just, you know, having a pole in the middle just because Houston wants it that way doesn't mean it meets ADA, because everything I see read in ADA says 4 feet clear space in order to make a turn. So they violate the ADA, and that's Houston's problem, not ours. We didn't. So if there's questions or anything else, I'm open.
Hi, Lindsay Hastings from San Diego. I regularly ride the trolley, and I know I button on the side for the plate to come out on the newer ones. Where is it on the inside of the trolley, though?
On the trolley, if you want the plate, on the new cars, the 3,000 ones, mm-hmm. As you face the door, it's a little bit to your left. It's right by the seats that flip up.
Okay.
It's made to be in reach of the for the wheelchair, people in a wheelchair. And you can push that button if you know ahead of time your stop is the next one. You can go to that button and push it at any point, and then the plate come out first And when the train stops, it'll come out, and then the doors will open.
Oh, that's great. Thank you.
Hi, Joan Nelson, San Diego. I met with somebody that works at MTS, and they informed me that when the trolley pulls up and they see someone standing waiting for the trolley, and like myself, and I'm standing on the yellow platform for the visually impaired, they're supposed to hit whatever button it is, and the speaker that announces what station they're stopping at, and also they're supposed to say on the loudspeaker, you know, Green Line, Old Town. It seems like 8 times out of 10, they don't turn the speaker on and announce what trolley it is that's pulling up in front of me so that I know whether or not I'm supposed to get on it. And I've reported it, but I don't know how you get it enforced.
Okay, the enforcement part becomes a little bit difficult because you have humans, and anytime you have humans, you get human error. The policy is that if you're boarding in an area that has multiple trains, red, you know, like the Blue Line, Orange Line through downtown, they are to announce which trolley they are and and their destination. If you're inside the car and you are getting off, the problem there is, and I'm trying to get them to look into some other ideas. Siemens told them when they connected to the cars, they would be exactly the same except for the small percentage. Small percentage is including the announce. They set the volume of the cars when they leave the yard. When they cuddle them, when they hook them together, they somehow, that is the part that screws up, and it screws the volume levels. It messes it up. So you can't always hear it, and it's hard to tell which car got on first. It could be the direction you're going, you got on the last car that came in. So they're working at getting, I'm trying to get them to go to microwave, because that's what Washington, D.C. has, and I got them to go, so they're working on it. They're trying to find a better way of doing it. The new cars, the new low-floor ones, don't have that problem. They're coupling fine. But it's the 1,000s and 2,000 cars that have that problem, and we've dealt with it from the word go. And there is a tape that is supposed to, all they have to do is hit a button, it plays the tape, and some of them don't do it. I have access to people where I can remind them to put out a driver's reminder to the some of the meetings I'm on that drivers are not doing that, and I can take care of that on Monday. I've also heard that they're not stopping properly on the mat, to the mat. They're supposed to line up that second door of the first car within an arm's reach of the button. Not you having to move to go find it, and then an arm's reach. It's supposed to be an arm's reach from like the center of that mat. And so the drivers just need to be aware.
Thank you very much.
They are not, for the time being, they are not announcing to stop.
Okay, part of it is, Cindy, the system itself, you may have been in the last car put on the train. They set up the other end, it's going to blast everybody, and you're in, you aren't going to hear anything. The new cars don't have that problem. When they said it was like 10%, the cars were 90% the same, they regretted ever telling us that, because the 10% basically had all to do with ADA. We redesigned the 2000 series cars. They didn't have a lot of things that we put in, like the center bar going down the stairwell. That wasn't in there originally. That was put in by the TAC committee. So there's several things we did. We also have an emergency button that will get into the driver. It is on the, if you're going along on the trolley, for some reason they put it on the opposite side, probably because most people won't be in that doorwell. So it's opposite of the side you would get off unless there's a center platform. Then if there's a center platform, you can get off on a couple of places either way, like Old Town. There is a long box with a button on it. You hit that button, it goes directly to the driver. If you have a problem, don't hesitate. Not calling stops is a thing that I've been we can call into the driver on that box.
Can I make a suggestion as far as standing on the mat and the trolley is approaching? What I tend to do is I'll cup my ear and kind of like put it as a sign gesture to the driver, hey, I'm listening, and I'll put my hand out there, cupping my ear, kind of hoping that he sees me doing that as a kind of visual signal that I'm waiting to hear what line it is.
Right. That's a, learning body language can really be helpful, and when you've been congenitally blind especially, we don't learn it. But a sign to a person who is sighted, if you cup your ear, your hand by your ear, is like, hey, I'm not hearing you. And it gets their attention. It's something they recognize. Don't mean anything to me much. But I know, I've learned that they recognize it. I've also learned that if you glare at drivers, that they can find the brake a lot better than if you don't look at them. You look at them, but you have to glare. You have to look like them. You get near me, I'm tearing your car apart, and then I'll tear you apart. And you got to think, and you, because I've never seen facial expressions, think of something really nasty. Kind of think that sight, hey, that thought, hey, I'm going to tear you apart if you keep getting any closer. And your face picks up that expression. And surprising how many people can figure out where a brake is. But body language is really important, and I really wish that there would be somebody who could figure out how to teach people who are congenitally blind what body language is, and how to use it, and how to, you know, and how people that are sighted use it, because it makes a big difference in our lives. And I don't know a lot of it, but I've heard a few things, and so I try to maneuver them. I try to use what I've learned, you know, for the people. Just out of, on a side, a lot of blind people walk with their heads straight ahead. Sighted people don't do that. They look around. So when you're doing that, people think, you know, that's like, hey, I'm blind. And people who want to do bad things, give you harassments or whatever, take that as an open invitation. You look around and you look like you see them. And they have yet to figure out, if I look in their direction, that I didn't see them. And if they knew what the description I would have, that I would give these would be, it's like when I tell them, you know, what does the driver look like? Well, it was a male. I can't tell you much more than that. I can't even tell a lot of times if it's white, black, or purple. But people think if you look at them, you've seen it. So keep that in mind. And again, use some of the body language.
Go ahead. I got a question. Two quick questions. First of all, I'm not from San Diego, but other than people here, it would be a good idea that your different centers like Braille and your the other center here tell their people or suggest their students that that they get in contact with you. And do you guys have a little training program that are designed to teach people who aren't at the convention about how to familiarize themselves with your transportation?
Okay, we don't have a training program. There's not a to do it. A person could come down and find out how. I think a lot of our mobility instructors have now learned how to do it. Uh-huh. If you're in a local area and you want to get some of this involvement, all government Type 2 entities under ADA are required to have an advisory committee. Mm-hmm. Bug them, find out where it is and try to get involved in it. And they have to take public comment. So even though we have committees here and stuff like that, there's a period of time where we take, in our meeting, we're open to public comment. A lot of times we don't have anybody there, but we do have the opportunity for public comment. And I think we've had because the committee is so active, we have problems in some areas do.
I just find that sometimes people aren't quite as informed. I see that you guys have a system where using the sensors in conjunction with like the plates and stuff. Have you got some background about when you looked into this, about the different sensors? Because I talked to Gene Lozano yesterday about you know, some possible legislation with the state and some kind of regulation about the sensors on the different metro rails and such, and have some sort of standards, you know, because like there's a lot of areas that aren't covered in with the sensors, or they don't have the right sensors to cover enough of the space, because you could always get a kid's arm in there, you know, like they've tried with using canes, and the doors wouldn't open on some of the vehicles right. because the sensors didn't detect them. So have you looked into this a bit? And maybe you could pass on later on, talk to me about it and give me some information.
Okay, I can also talk to Jean Lozano.
Okay, that'd be good.
And I'm also on the CAT committee. But the equipment that we have on our vehicles right now are all through Siemens. Ask them when your local area wants to get a car to look into the San Diego design.
Okay.
Because they know the cars is different, you know, by the city. Tell me you want the San Diego car.
No, these are, this is a light rail, and we're not talking, are these truly trolleys?
Yeah, these are light rail.
Right, like, oh, you're right, like, oh, light.
And also, the Sprinter has a lot of the same stuff, but that's the North County part equivalent. And in their case, they have a bridge that walks up, that goes to the door. You can board it either door equally. And again, if you're in the doorway, they can't shut. And their sensors are real sensitive.
Okay. Thank you.
Okay, ladies and gentlemen, we need to move on because we've got to get to our updates from the schools. I'm working out very best. So it's maybe just one more question and then that's it.
Okay.
Oh, okay, I guess that's it. Thank you, Charlie.
Okay, you need a microphone. I'll bring it to you, Lee.
Do we have, who do we have from schools here today? Ah, we haven't seen Andy Caruso in a long time. So Andy, do you want to tell us what's going on with Guide Dogs of America?
Hi, everybody. It's been a while since I've been here, so it's really nice. This is the boring part of the program because GD never changes much. So I want to just tell you, if you don't know, that GDA offers more of a traditional program. We do a full 4 weeks for first-timers and 3 weeks for retrains. Occasionally, sometimes people, retrains even need the 4 weeks. But we, I think our program might run a little slower than some other programs, but this is kind of what works for us. And so we're kind of old school, I guess. We also do some in-homes occasionally, but we really look at areas of greatest need. If someone has a medical problem, can't get off work, something like that. So we do have our in-homes, we have a list going on for to do some in-homes. We have four scheduled classes a year, and then an additional class occasionally for retrains, a 2 or 3 week class. Actually, we've put in a November, December class. It's a 3 week reclass. We'll have 9 people in that class, and we're looking forward to that. And we have 10 people per class, 3 instructors for every 10 people. And we graduate about, we aim for 45 to 50 teams a year. We don't always accomplish that, but we try. Currently, we have 7 licensed instructors and 3 apprentices. And some of the, well, we're counting Chuck and Steve as licensed instructors, so they're not actually working. Well, no, Steve is. Actually, Chuck was off. He had knee surgery, which was a long time coming. So he just was back last week, so he's so happy. He actually told me this week he worked a dog, and he was on the moon. He was over the moon about it. So we have 2 new instructors. Brian Young and Mindy Romero, and so we're really looking forward to continuing to work with them. Let's see what else. We had a new president in January, and he's very looking towards sprucing up the place. We have a new graduation area. We were kind of spilling out into the weather during our graduation, so it's much bigger and much nicer. He is also very dedicated to renewing our German Shepherd program. And so we will be having, this is down the road a little bit, you know, devoting some finances and some time and effort into rebuilding our Shepherd colony. Probably realistically, it's a couple years down the road, but hopefully we may have a few, you know, in between, but that's kind of what we're looking for. But like everyone else, mostly Labrador Retrievers, we're doing some Lab Golden Crosses. We have some nice Goldens coming up, and of course the Shepherds, hopefully in a year or two. We're not doing poodles or poodle crosses. We may, another thing, we may occasionally have one. We have a couple of raisers who are very poodle people. But even though the ones that we've graduated are very nice dogs, we have dropped many, many more. So it was kind of a science experiment, and it we're probably not going to pursue that. So I know Guide Dogs of the Desert is has them, and very nice ones. So that's it for me. See? Boring, huh?
Yay! Oh, okay.
All right. Okay.
Who is it? Hi, this is Ariel Gilbert from Guide Dogs for the Blind, and I'm here with my guide dog, Splash, one of those discontinued models from Guide Dogs. She's a German Shepherd. And Keith Tomlinson is also here, so some of you may have seen him, and Janine Kitahara is also here, but I'm going to do the school update. A couple big changes recently. Our development director is retiring in November, Andy Eber. So we're doing a big national search to come up with a new development director. And in April, I believe it was, Nancy Gardner, our CEO, retired. And we have an interim CEO who happens to be a guide dog graduate, Morgan Watkins. And his guide dog, Golden Retriever, Will. And so Morgan will be our interim CEO until we do a national search, which will happen after we replace our development director. Some of you have heard that we were looking at building a new dormitory. We still are, though we had targeted April of 2011 as the start date. It's now going to be in 2012 at some point. So we kind of downscaled the whole concept of, you know, redoing the admin building on the San Rafael campus and the dormitory, and are focusing just on our student services and the dormitory part of it. So that will happen. We have the yellow Labradors, black Labradors, golden retrievers, and crosses as our breeds. And for training, some of you probably have heard that we've gone to 2-week and 3-week classes for not only retrains, but for first-time students. And we did that by changing the instructor-to-student ratio. All of the 2-week classes are done on the Oregon campus. And for 2-week classes, the student-to-instructor ratio is 2-to-1. So it's more customized training and more individualized training, so that there's less downtime and waiting your turn to go out to do a route. And then the three-week classes are held all on the San Rafael campus. Though if you're a retrain and you want to do 2 weeks on the San Rafael campus, you can do that as well. And so now, one of the things that we've been doing too is to encourage people to be more active in their in the training is that we provide all of the student lectures ahead of time so that students can review the lecture material, and then when we get together with the students in class, it's more of a review of those materials rather than instructors standing there lecturing at you, and most of the time there's a lot of head bobbing and, you know, drifting off to sleep. So, and that's been really successful in creating goals for each student while before they even come to class. So, like for me, being a rower, I wanted to make sure that Splash, dog named Splash, was not going to want to walk me off the dock and into the water because she is attracted to the water. So, one of my routes while I was in class was to go to actually the boathouse where I row and work the dog down on the dock, and that worked out really well. So, you know, so students that are going to college have a chance to go and work on a college campus. Some of the other updatey things that we have is those of you who know Emily Simone, one of our field managers, who's always worked really closely with the San Francisco Police Department with dog attacks, has updated our website that and now has the dog attack laws for every state and every province in the country for U.S. and Canada. So it's a great resource, and it's also really good to have that information sort of in your back pocket, anything ever to come up, that you really are knowledgeable in, because not all police departments and police officers are aware of what the state laws for, you know, state of California. And lots of times they'll say, hey, oh no, that's a problem that you call animal control for, and in reality it is a state, you know, a law that the police department is supposed to be involved. So definitely check out the website for that. In September, we had our third alumni reunion on the CFL campus, and we had almost 200 grads from around the country that came. It was really a lot of fun. Teresa Duncan, our alumni director, did an amazing job. Keith, have I forgotten anything? Okay, well, I won't put you guys to sleep, and I'll wrap it up, and if you have any questions, feel free to come up.
Thanks, Ariel.
We have a question.
Okay. Get a mic to him.
I don't have a question. I was wondering if anybody else had questions before I start my presentation.
No?
Okay. Guess not.
Okay. Go ahead.
Hi, I'm Linda Simolsky. I'm the Student Services Coordinator for Guide Dogs of the Desert.
Yay!
And of course, Bob Wendler would have loved to be, but he's in class right now. And so it's just me and Buster, me and Bubby. And so Bob does his best, and he sends his greetings, and he loves coming to the convention because, you know, Bob doesn't know a stranger, and he loves everyone. And so he misses coming, but unfortunately, the conventions are always when we have class, because we're just outside of Palm Springs, and in the summer, it's really hot there. So we've been able to do more in-home trainings during the summer because outside of Palm Springs, it gets really, really hot because we're in the desert. And so that's one of the things that we've been able to do this past summer is more in-homes. Most of you probably heard that we were going to move. The sale fell through, so we didn't move, but it gave us the opportunity to really just turn the whole campus upside down, get rid of old stuff, paint, clean it really, really from top to bottom, just give it a new look and a new spruce. And so, you know, stuff happens in this life, and so we didn't get to move. And we do have a beautiful facility, so we are very lucky that we're still able to run and function. Let's see. We have right now a very long waiting list. However, the most important thing that we stress is the match. And so your wait could be 6 months, 3 months, or it could be over a year. And for people with special needs, it might take a little longer because we need to find the right dog and we need to train the dog for that specific need that you might have. So it just depends. Let's see, what else? Right now we have three licensed instructors, and we have one apprentice, Emily Goodland, and she is also a mobility instructor, so that adds to our training. Let's see, one of the really cool things that we're looking into, and maybe you've seen this email go around. We had a request to look into maybe having blind parents with infants come into class and train their dogs. So we're right now in the research phase of that, and we're hoping to implement that class later on in the year. We asked questions. Have you ever had, you know, God, let's see, what were the questions? I didn't write them down. When you were blind, were you congenitally blind, and have you had small children, and what was your mobility like? Did you use a cane or a dog, and what was the experience of that? And then did you get the support that you needed as in mobility realm? I got so many great stories back. I would like to really do a panel discussion of just letting people share their experiences as a blind parent. You know, all the different things that we go through as parents and all the different mobility issues that we have. But all of the stories were anecdotal, and they were really great. I loved reading them. Let's see. Next year in the fall, we'll do another veterans class, all veterans class. We feel that that's really important. And so we put the word out to all the VAs around the country, and we have them go through the application process, and then we choose the ones that we have for class. Our classes continue to be small. We only have 6 per class. That's our maximum, so then we can individualize our instruction. We continue to use Labradors, Standard Poodles, Labradoodles, Cross Labrador Golden Retrievers like Buster, and we're starting to breed German Shepherds. We're starting a breeding program for German Shepherds. So I think that's it for my report. Are there any questions? Okay.
Now, Linda, I have a quick question, unless I missed this. How many classes per year, and what's your ratio? This is Debbie.
Hi. We're trying to do 4 classes per year.
Okay.
Plus the in-homes if people qualify. So we're really ramping up our graduate numbers.
Are you doing first? Did I miss this? Are you doing first-time in-homes?
Yes.
Oh, you are. Okay. Okay. And what's the ratio?
3 to 1.
3 to 1. Thank you.
Hi, Linda. This is Jerry Arakawa. I had a question for you. Has Bob talked about how the flight training is going with the dogs, having them ride in the plane?
How the flight training is?
Yeah, that is to say, he was saying that as part of the class, the dogs
sit in the
airplane.
You know, we haven't flying to Arizona like we were because, I'll tell you, Riverside County has been really impacted by the economy. And so we're not traveling, but we do take a trip to the airport. We do a mock plane ride. And so that is within our training. Don't make them too hard. Bob's not here.
All right, what about people that are on occasional oxygen, portable oxygen?
You know, I would go ahead and apply. And then when Bob comes to do the interview, or whoever, Trina, whoever comes to do the interview, it's a case-by-case basis. So I would just go ahead and apply and then see what happens.
Hi there, Linda. It's Nancy Younger.
Hi, Nancy.
Hi. I have a question. I know that you know, I know pretty much about the lectures, but if I know when I first went to Guide Dogs of the Desert, they did actually braille the lectures or tape the lectures as well. And would you maybe follow in the future? Maybe follow what Guide Dogs of America is doing with their lectures.
Sure.
Thank you.
Yeah. You know, I'll bring that back to the staff and see what they say.
Linda.
Yes, sir. Hi, Ken.
In the questions you were speaking of with parents, with the panel, what about a question such as, have you ever used or worked a guide dog with children?
Yeah, that's a great question.
I mean, because I have done it, so I mean, that's...
Right. I think that was in the set of three questions. Did somebody see that, or does somebody remember the email I sent?
Oh, she did. I read everything. But
yeah, was that in... Cause,
is that in it?
I just turned 60 yesterday. I can't remember.
Sorry, I'm 4 years older.
Yeah.
So, yeah. CRS. You know.
Yeah, it is. Exactly. Yeah, that's what I thought. So, yeah, it was one of the questions. But I would love to bring back some of those anecdotes, and I would love to see a panel discussion or just people sitting around tables like this and just talking about it, because it was emotional, it was heartwarming, it was funny, it was wonderful, and people poured out stuff, and I don't think we've ever really had a discussion like that.
Right, because I know I used to walk when the kids were in strollers, and I had the dog on the left, and then I'd have one of the kids, you know, pulling the stroller from behind.
Right.
So I think my kids grew up backwards for that reason.
Yeah, yeah. Those umbrella strollers were great.
Okay, I would sort of like to hear from all three schools on. The law has been changed. I mean, when I first started with guide dogs way back in the Stone Age in 1986, home training wasn't even thought of. And for retrains especially, I mean, for retrains, but, you know, first-time guide users don't even go there. And then it was changed to allow retrains. Now the law's changed where first-time guide dog users can get it. And we also have two-week beginner's classes and three-week beginner classes. And I think it's great that there are options. Don't get me wrong. I always like choices. But it seems like when I'm talking to a lot of the consumers, they're running a little afraid. They're kind of going like, wait a minute, I still like the three-week class, and I'm a retrain. I know we think we want to do the popular thing, but as schools, do you think you're listening to the consumers and trying to keep their concerns in mind as well? So that's my...
Well, you know, I'm going to speak for myself personally. So just for the record, I'm speaking as Linda, not representing the school. Okay? I think that for a lot of us, 3 weeks is too much. I think for a lot of us, it's not enough. And I think that also personally, for a first-time user, I think 2 weeks or 3 weeks is not enough. because there's so much to learn. There's so much bonding involved. There's so much mobility, and mobility has changed. It's not the same as it used to be. And using a dog in a changed environment is very difficult. So that's my personal perspective. As far as the schools, of course, they're going to do what's mandated and what the consumers out there want to do, you know, so that's my perspective.
Thank you. Hi, I'm Lois Renfro. I did the two-week training with my third dog up at San Rafael. Given the circumstances, I would think I would have preferred a three-week course. I got Gabrina, my third dog. She's a Labrador retriever. Previous to that, I had two golden retrievers. Now, there's a big difference in the type of dog. And furthermore, I was up there in the rainy season, the first 2 weeks of February. So we had a lot of fun playing in the water. And I discovered that she likes to jump over curbs when there's water in them. So here I go having all kinds of fun. I came home with what I thought was, oh God, too much dog for me to manage. So, and I'm over 75, and it was a task. My trainers were great. They gave me every opportunity to work. I got great compliments, even from Mike Del Ross the other day on the phone. He said, you just work a dog really well. Well, I've spent some months getting used to working with a Labrador rather than a Golden. And one of the things that I find peculiar in their behavior is that when I went out, I could leave my Goldens in the apartment. They wouldn't touch anything. She'll eat up everything. I mean, she'll chew on the remote control. She anything she can get on. So I would have appreciated a little more education as to what the difference is in one breed of dog as opposed to the other. But God bless guide dog schools. They do a wonderful work. Thank you.
Thank you.
Hi, this is Ariel Dugs, and since we are probably the only school in the country that's doing the 2, 3, and 3 week classes for first timers and giving people options, I think what we're hearing is that there are, each person is a unique person, and there are unique circumstances for each person, and that's why we have created the 2 week classes, the 3 week classes, the in-home training. And one of the things that we've gotten feedback, because we've been doing these 2 and 3 week classes for first timers just for a little over a year now. And we always give people the option that if they don't feel like they're ready to go home with it, you know, that they're not secure in the relationship with their dog, or they're just not feeling secure about the training yet, that they have the option of having somebody come and do some in-home with them right after they get home. And right now, the feedback I've gotten from our graduate services department is there have only been a couple people out of the 22 classes that have graduated that have asked for that additional assistance after they go home. So, you know, having, by redesigning how we do our classes, increasing the student instructor ratio, and, you know, creating goals with each individual, I think, try and meet each student's need, whether they're a first timer or a retrain or working with a breed that they're not used to working with. You know, each person is unique, and what we want to be able to do is meet the needs of each individual, and that's why we created the classes. So does anybody have any questions about how we're doing the 2 and 3 week classes for first timers?
this is Andy. I just wanted to put my two cents in, and then we could do questions. I'll be quick. As I said, we're very traditional. We are doing the four-week classes for first-timers, so forth. You know, I frequently talk to people who have time constraints, have family constraints, and I regularly refer them out to other schools. You know, they say, oh, I only have 3 weeks. I say, you know, contact GDB. And it's, I think, and I get referrals from other places too. So I think ultimately, kind of the admissions people, we all kind of know a little bit about the other schools. And it's not so important that you come to our school, it's that you get a good dog. And that's kind of bottom line.
Yeah. Yay. This is Mary Beth. I kind of hate to be the bad guy, but we are going to have to break up. A couple of announcements. I want to thank all of the representatives from the guide dog schools for coming this morning. I also want to thank Charlene for coming to talk to us about the trolley and all of their safety features. Really appreciate that, you know, with all that's been going on, you know, these last few weeks, you know, that's, you know, forefront in our mind and safety. So thank you. So thank you, everybody, for coming to the morning program, and we will see you at lunchtime. And bring your tickets. Could I have everyone's attention, please? Hi, this is Mary Beth Randall, President of Guide Dog Users of California. Welcome, everybody, to the Guide Dog Users of California lunch. And I'd like to be able to just sort of let everybody know, for those who didn't make it this morning, we had elections, and we have some changes to the board. And want to congratulate Pam Metz on now being our vice president. And Ken Metz was reelected as treasurer, and Jerry Aragua was elected as our secretary. And because Debbie Flowers has termed out, we now have a new board member, David Jackson. And I want to welcome him, and I want to thank Debbie for having served on the board. She's been wonderful to have on the board, and we hope she comes back after a break off the board and comes back to us.
Thank you.
And I would love to, we're a pretty full room, but if we have a couple of people that can help run around, have everybody briefly introduce yourself and your dog, and then we're going to have our speakers say hello to or talk to us about their discussion. So my name, of course, was Mary Beth, and I have a yellow lab named Tennyson, and he just turned 5, and he is from Guide Dogs for the Blind. And I will hand it to Debbie.
Thank you. First of all, I'd like to say it was my pleasure to be on the board, and I thought it was an honor to have been elected, so thank you very much. I have a yellow lab from GDB, and he just turned 7 already. Sorry, his name is Markham. No, not Marco, Markham.
That is a great name for a male dog, isn't it? Oh, anyway, I'm Lee Morton, and I have Ed, who's kind of the black sheep of the table, because we got 2 yellow labs and 1 black lab. So he's the black lab. And he was trained at GDB's Oregon campus, and he has been working almost 2.5 years, and he will be 5 in March. And thank you very much. We'll pass the mic.
Hi, this is Lynn Gwizdak with the CCB San Diego chapter. I have a male Labrador Golden Retriever mix. He's red. His name is Landon. He's about to be 5 years old, and he's from the Seeing Eye.
Hello, my name is Dave Hoffman from the Silicon Valley chapter, and I have a graduate from Oregon campus. We graduated last Saturday, and his name is Calvin. His name is Calvin. He's a yellow lab, and he will be 2 in February.
I'm Vivian, and I have Hawaii from GDB. And the neat thing this time is that Hawaii's sister is here. And so I'll let that person say who they are, okay? Here you go.
I'm Karen Leger. I'm from Guide Dogs. And I graduated 3 months ago with Dottie. And I'm Cindy Taylor. I've got Solana, a yellow lab from Guide Dogs for the Blind, and she turned 3 in August.
Happy birthday, Lindy.
Okay, that's great.
Passing it along.
I'm on your left.
Hi, I'm Linda O'Neill, and I have Mara Lee, and she's a black lab, and she's from Guide Dogs, and she'll be 3 on Pearl Harbor Day, December 7th. And we graduated in October last year.
I don't have a dog. My name is Helen.
Okay, thank you.
This is Perry Wolf, self-trained guide dog, Delilah. No harness today. Got taken away. And this is Pat.
This is Pat Wolf, and I'm waiting for a dog from whatever school answers me first.
Hi, everybody. This is Nellie Emerson. I have Wicker with me. She's a female German Shepherd from Seeing Eye.
My name is Charles. I have a yellow lab named Falcon from Guide Dogs.
My name is Ethel Kirtley. I have a yellow lab, Wassel, and she is from San Rafael. And she'll be 8, January 8th.
Hi, I'm Beth Berenson. I don't have a guide dog, but I had to eat lunch somewhere, and y'all have guide dogs, so here I am. Plus, this is the most fun lunch. The most fun people are here.
I'm glad it wasn't a hot dog. I'm Ken Metz, and I have Maiden, and that means she's not married. And she is a black lab and 6 years old.
Hello, everyone. I'm Pamela Metz, and I have Kingston, and he's a male yellow lab. He's 3 years old, and he is from Guide Dogs of America.
I'm on your left. I'll take it.
Hello, everyone. I'm Linda Samolsky. I'm the Student Services Coordinator with Guide Dogs of the Desert, and I have Buster, who's 4, and he's a golden lab cross.
Happy birthday, Linda.
Thank you.
Here. Hi everyone, my name is Nikki. I have yellow lab Coral with me from the Guide Dogs for the Blind. No, I didn't confuse schools.
Hello, I'm Jerry Arakawa with a female yellow lab Tova from Guide Dogs for the Blind in Oregon. She is almost 6 years old, turning 6 in March.
I'm Ann Kaiser, immediate past president of GDUC, and I'm here with Daytona. She just turned 8 2 weeks ago. And she's from the Guide Dogs of the Blind San Rafael, and I've had her a little over 6 years now.
Hello, everyone. This is Tuan Nguyen from the ACB Capital Chapter. I'm here to enjoy the program, and I don't have a guide dog, so I'll just... got here to meet new people and learn the GDGC. Thank you.
Hello, my name is Monique McCorley from the San Diego chapter. I use a white cane.
Hi, everybody. My name is Rocio, and I'm from. My name is Rocio Sanchez, and I'm from BCC. My cane name is Alan. But I'm doing everything I can to get a guide dog, so maybe next year I will have one.
Yeah.
I'm looking forward to it. Thank you.
Yes, Scott Leeson from San Diego Chapter. I'm here with Kevin, who's 9 years old, just turned 9 in September, and he's from the CNI.
Okay, I'm Deborah Thompson from the Capital Chapter, and I have my guide dog, Adrina, and we just graduated from Guide Dogs in Santa Fe on October 9th.
Hi, everyone. I'm Debbie Kessler, and I have Chaz, isn't that a great name, Chazman, from GDB.
Hi, I'm Lois Renfro from San Diego. I have Gabrina, who is from GDB. We graduated in February, as I said. She's 2.5 years old, female yellow lab.
Good afternoon. My name is David Jackson, and my dog's name is Rolo, and that's with two L's, and he's as sweet as can be, and we got him from San Fel, so he's just a wonderful dog.
He is a yellow lab.
Yellow lab. My name is Charlene Ornelas. I have a black lab golden retriever cross. Her name is Whisper. The school had a sense of humor. My dog I had before that was Whistler. And they say to, you know, get over your other dog. Well, they tried to see how challenging they could make it. I was even in the same room as I was before. But anyway, Whisper is 7. She turned 7 in June, and she's from Guide Dogs of America.
Hi, everyone. My name's Carly Ride, and with me is Anya, a female yellow lab from Getting Eyes, and today is her 5th birthday.
Thank you. I'm on your right with the microphone.
I'm Glenda Castle, President, San Diego Chapter, and I got a white cane. I can just call him Charlie.
Hi, I'm Lindsay Hastings. I have with me my first dog, Valencia, who just turned 4 on October 1st, and she's a black lab from San Rafael.
Hi, I'm Katherine Johnson, and I'm from Colorado. I have Nestle with me. She's a black lab female from GDA, and she's 5 years old.
Hi, I'm Nancy Younger. I'm the Gaduck board member. I have Nigel from Guide Dogs of the Desert. He'll be 5 on January 1st. He's a golden yellow cross, and he's Buster's brother. He's a wonderful dog also. Thank you.
Hello, my name is Linda Johnson, and I'm here with my golden retriever, Renata, and she's from GDB, and I just wanted to throw it out there. I'm also the president of the newly formed chapter for GDB in Northern California, and the name of our group is called Guide Dogs of Foggy Doggies, so...
Hi, my name is Alice McGrath. My name is Alice McGrath, and I'm here with my yellow lab, Cato, and he is 7.5 years old, and he's from GDB as well.
Hi, I'm Lisa Irving. I have Bernie. He is a yellow variegated puppy. He's a lab, and he's from Guiding Eyes. And we've only been out of school for less than a month.
I'm Patty Gwizdak, and I use a cane. I'm in the San Diego chapter of CCB.
Let Freeman, CCB chapter, use a cane myself.
Hello, I'm Keith Tomlinson. I'm the field manager in Southern California.
Thank you. That means none of your dogs are having any problems, right? So, it's nice to be here with all of you and see so many friends.
Joan Nelson, San Diego. My dog is Franny. She's a yellow lab. I call her a little lab because she's only 55 pounds. And she's my first guide dog, and she's 2.5. And this is my first time here, and I'm having a great time. Looking forward to joining all you folks.
I found you.
Oh, you went? Oh, I'm sorry.
We missed. My name is Pamela Davis, and I'm here with my husband Alan Davis. And I'm a white cane user, and my husband's low vision. And we're glad to be here. We're from San Diego Chapter.
All right. Thank you. Wow, we have a great group here, obviously. This is wonderful. And birthday dogs and people, and that's fabulous. Just real quick, and then I'm going to hand it over to Lee Morton. It is time to renew dues with guide dog users. And so you can go to our booth up at Exhibits till 4 p.m. today and renew your dues or become a new member. And it's $20 a year. And so you can take care of that. Plus, we have our 50-50 raffle up there at the booth. And that will be drawn this evening at the banquet. And also, there are three very lovely wall hangings that would like a home that we hope that somebody will go by and buy. And so I am going to turn it over to Lee Morton, who is going to introduce our speakers for the lunch. Okay, let me hand this down to Lee.
Okay, the first gentleman I am going to introduce is Adams. And sometimes we all want to know, what are transit companies training their drivers with respect to people with disabilities and with respect to guide dogs? And so we've got two gentlemen here from San Diego Transit who have been involved with the field for many, 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 many years. And the first one who is going to speak is Mike Adams. I will turn it over to him right now.
Good afternoon, everybody. Can you hear me? Everybody. Good afternoon, everybody. I've been in the transit industry for a little over 20 years, and I've spoken at a lot of conferences, and I will say that you guys are certainly the liveliest bunch that I've ever had an opportunity to speak to. And that's a great thing. I certainly appreciate your spirit, and I love dogs, so it's great to see all the beautiful dogs here and how well behaved they are. So congratulations to you. Congratulations on those that trained your dogs. Let me tell you a little bit about the MTS. And MTS is an acronym for the Metropolitan Transit System. For those of you that live in the San Diego area, you probably know it's the San Diego Transit. We run the trolley system and the bus system throughout most of San Diego County. We operate local fixed route transit service. We operate the access service for the elderly and disabled. We also run commuter service, which runs up and down the I-15 corridor from Escondido and Poway into downtown San Diego. We also operate service out in the rural parts of the eastern part of San Diego County. So we cover a pretty wide area. We are very proud to say in last year, in 2009, we were recognized as the top transit agency in North America. And that's in comparison to, thank you very much. That's in comparison to the largest transit agencies, not only in the United States, but also in Canada. And that award is given based upon a number of categories, including customer service, safety, on-time performance, and just the feedback from you, the riders. And so that is a very big honor. We have a great system. And Lee asked me to come to speak to you today. And we've been playing phone tag and email tag for the past 2 months. But I'm glad today is finally here. And it's hard to say, well, what is it I should speak to you about? And how should I phrase this and put it together? But I've tried my best, and we'll certainly open it up to questions at the end. A little bit about MTS and the ADA, the Americans with Disability Act. As a public agency, MTS and any transit agency is required by the ADA to provide equal levels of service not only to able-bodied passengers but to those with disabilities. And under the ADA, we have to allow people with disabilities bring their service animals into all areas of the business where customers are normally allowed to go. And so obviously, if we're running a bus company, that means we need to allow service animals onto our buses, onto our trolleys, into our stations, and into our offices. The current definition of a service animal, based upon the ADA, is an animal that has been individually trained to provide assistance to an individual with a disability. This current definition does not specify the type of animal, but certainly limits and specifies what those animals. And I'll talk in a couple of minutes just about the most recent change in that definition of service animals. Our policy, and a little bit more about MTS, we operate a lot of service. However, we contract out a lot of our services to private contractors. So myself and Johnny Braxton here, we work directly for MTS, but there are probably three or four different parts of our system that are operated by contractors who train their drivers based upon our guidelines, but they have own training programs. So you may, you certainly as the general public are not going to be aware that there's an MTS driver versus a contracted service driver. And the goal is to actually make it a streamlined service, but just due to the way that the system is set up, there are different methods of training those operators. But in general, the MTS policy towards service animals are the operators must allow a passenger with a service animal to board the bus or use the facilities. It is against MTS policy to request any papers, a license, or training certificate. We are not, as operators, allowed to ask you for proof that that is a service animal. We are not allowed to request documentation. The operator may ask, and this is MTS policy, and it is also according to the ADA, is your dog a service animal for the disabled? And they only allow us to ask that if it's not readily apparent. Nowadays, it's very trendy for people to bring dogs onto buses, into stores, and dogs have become a normal, everyday part of people's lives. But it's not readily apparent. We're allowed to ask. Otherwise, we certainly train our operators to just board the passenger. If the passenger insists that an animal is a service animal, the operator must take the passenger's word for it. Again, not to create a confrontation. It's not allowed for us to force you to prove that you have a service animal. If you say it's a service animal, then we certainly, in compliance with the ADA and MTS policy, are required to allow you to ride the bus. It is the passenger's responsibility to maintain control of their service animal at all times. And that's where we have some issues. And as your service animal, and all your dogs here are very well trained and well behaved.
Thank you.
You're welcome. The only issue, as bus operators and just as providers of service to the general public, the ADA does require that those dogs stay under control and that they don't become a threat or a bother to other passengers or create a safety hazard for the bus. The ADA also says the fear of animals or allergic reactions are not acceptable reasons for refusing service. In other words, if I have a bus operator that says, I'm really allergic to dogs, or I have another passenger that says I can't be around dogs, that's just, there are a lot of pros and cons to using public service, public transportation. And certainly saying that you're allergic or you have a fear of dogs is not a reason, a liable reason for us to deny service to you. And operators are trained not to make assumptions on how a particular dog or a type of animal will react, or what their conceptions are of a particular breed of dog or animal. They certainly, again, are allowed to ask if that's a service animal, but that's it. Their job is to provide service to you and to the general public. Now, the change in the definition of a service animal just recently came up. The Department of Justice, who administers the Americans with Disability Act, changed the definition from service animal. They made it a much more narrow definition. To now, they're limiting service animals to only being dogs. I'm sorry? Yeah, service animals will now only be dogs. In the past, people have used monkeys or snakes or all kinds of types of animals. So they've narrowed that definition. And primarily it's just because dogs, and they do allow miniature horses. I think just simply because they can certify the training and that dogs are obviously trainable. And there's no way to verify the training of a monkey or any other type of animal. And so they've narrowed that definition, which will certainly, I understand that that change will go into effect in March of next year. We're not quite sure how that's going to affect how service animals are treated by the transit agencies. My belief and the belief in the industry is pretty much that we'll continue to allow people to board with animals and be very conservative in our approach to that until we're given further guidance from the federal government and from the agencies that oversee our service. I'm going to turn it over to Johnny just a little bit to talk about what we do in terms of training our bus operators. Like I said, MTA provides a very wide range of services and covers a very wide service area. So some of the things that we see here operating buses in the downtown areas of San Diego are certainly going to be different than what you might see on an MTS bus in the rural parts of the eastern part of the county or running commuter services. Obviously the clientele may be different, the conditions of the buses may be different. The types of vehicles that you're going to use are going to be different. So I'll turn it over to Johnny a little bit to have him talk a little bit about our training programs. And then, like I said, we can open it up to any questions you may have.
Hello, everybody. Good afternoon. My name is Johnny Braxton, Jr. I've been employed at San Diego Transit now for about close to 32 years. I've been associated with training off and on for about 10 years and full-time for about 8 years. And I'm happy to see that some of you have been riding the bus that long and have gotten older with me. Like this lady right here, I recognize about four of you, so that's a good thing. We've grown old together. And it is a blessing to see you. So just a word about our training. We have ongoing training. It doesn't stop. So once a year, the operators do come up for some more ADA training. And then our operator, when they first get hired, they have training also. And we do sensitivity training, where we have the operators with the cane and with the blacked out sunglasses board and unboard our buses so they can see how daunting a time it is. And we also have them also get in wheelchairs and ride around in the bus and see how daunting that is. So ongoing sensitivity training. One of the special things that I try to instill in some of the operators is when the dogs and their handlers and their owners get on board is the dogs are well behaved, like Mike said. And one of the things we always try to watch out is for their tails. Because yeah, so we're always looking for the tails and make sure the tails get in where they're supposed to be. Another thing that we stress upon our operators to do is that when we see someone with a dog or someone with a cane, to make contact with that person, to let them know what route it is and their destination. Even when they have the signs, sometimes they'll say Route 7 or whatever, where they want to go, we still have the operator come and make contact with that person to let them know what route they are and where they're headed. So I'm going to turn this back over to Mike, but like I said, it's good to see some of you. I'm glad I'm not the only one growing old, and I hope to see you in the future.
Again, just real quick on Johnny. Johnny is our senior instructor here, and I don't mean that just because he's the oldest, but... really just because he's been doing it longer than anybody else in the department. Johnny also does our mobility device assistance training. We periodically will get calls that come in through our customer service office for people who are new to the system or may have gotten new mobility devices and want to try them out on our buses. And what we do is we arrange a time for them to come to our facility. Not in the general public, not on a route, but just on a bus with Johnny. And Johnny's able to take them and show them how the wheelchairs will be secured or how their mobility devices will be secured and explain to them how to best use the service. A couple of weeks ago, I was in a meeting with the training department up at Orange County Transit Authority. And they actually do once or twice a year provide training for people with guide dogs. And they have an arrangement with Knott's Berry Farm and some other agencies and organizations in Orange County for an all-day training session. We aren't presently equipped to do that, but certainly, you know, we understand that more and more people are using our services that have mobility devices or may use service animals. So certainly in the future, we would be more than happy to assist. And now that I'm finally able to meet Lee and get to meet some of you, I certainly hope that we can be of assistance to you in the future. So.
Are there any questions? Yes. Okay, Cindy Kaler.
Take only about three or four questions.
I think we can have about three or four questions, and then I guess we have to get out of here, guys. But Cindy.
I understand the blue line is being renovated from the border. It's all the way downtown. I don't know. But is there going to be any assistance for us getting crossing the trolley tracks and all this, and I understand we'll have to, they'll have shuttle buses. Could you kind of talk about all this?
Yes, I can speak to that in a very general sense. I'm not a part of the actual... Okay.
This is Charlene. I mentioned it to you earlier that what they're going to do is they're going to have their assistants at the trolley stations to assist you from getting from the entry to the station or where the buses, you know, you'd get on the trolley to where the bus that will be a shuttle will be located. If there's at a time when that high incidence people moving, they may use the compliance officers or the security officers to do this, but they will have people available, and if you don't, those that are in San Diego know how to get a hold of me, let me know, because I'll pass the word on, but I'm giving red lights to the trolley directly that they've got to watch, and you know, for people who are blind and have guide dogs or white canes, and the first phase is only going to be from the border to Iris. So anybody boarding in Iris, Cindy, not going to be affected. And as soon as I find out that your stops are going to be affected, I will personally let you directly know.
Here we go. Thank you. Iris is closed down this weekend.
Yeah, the stations will close for this weekend. They will open back up in time for rush hour service on Monday morning. And the whole purpose behind the renovation of the Blue Line is to modernize it. They will eventually bring in cars similar, if you've ever ridden the Green Line, the cars are low floored. And they're a little more they're easier to access. There's no stairs in them, and they're bringing in low-floor trolley cars to make it more accessible to those with disabilities.
For those of us not from the San Diego area, the sensitivity training and the training you were talking about, the driver's experience with people with canes and dogs and wheelchairs, is the training that you do above and beyond what the ADA requires, or can we expect the same kind of training from our drivers elsewhere in California?
You know, we certainly train to meet the requirements of the ADA. We actively look for new improvements and new ways of training bus operators. And that unfortunately is almost specific to the transit agencies in terms of how their training programs set up. I am part of a regional training instructors network, which is made up of transit agencies throughout Southern California. We meet four times a year, and the purpose of that group is to talk about how we train our bus operators. Every agency is overseen by the Federal Transit Administration. We are audited every 3 years by that agency to not only make sure that we are in compliance with the ADA in terms of our record keeping and our bus stop announcements and those types of things, but also to see that we are training our operators, that we don't allow them to just hop behind the wheel of a bus and take off, but that they know how to deal with those with disabilities, and we try to go above and beyond. So last year we were recognized as a top transit agency in North America, so I certainly hope that part of that award was that our training was above and beyond what was called for.
First off, I want to compliment San Diego Transit. You guys have done so much and come so far to be so accommodating, so thank you. My question is this. It's actually a statement first. The frequency is increasing where when you get on a bus in disabled seating, there's lots of strollers and lots of large granny carts, and it's making it increasingly difficult to keep our dogs safe. What are your recommendations?
You know, that is a very... a very tough situation for us, because we are not allowed to require those people to vacate those seats. And so we actually, as Johnny said, we have annual training for our operators, and we just completed that within the past couple of months. And part of that training was to talk about how to politely ask, and you were talking about being in compliance with ADA. We are very... there are very strict guidelines into how we phrase, how we encourage people to vacate those seats to make them available for the seniors and for the disabled. So, you know, again, we try to train our operators to provide the best service and to open that space up. Our buses now are of a different design, so that there should be there's a wider opening towards the front of the buses versus the way the seating was arranged in the older models. So there should be a little more room. Again, certainly if you're having an issue, feel free to speak with the operator of that bus, and he or she should be able to provide with some assistance, or certainly you can call into our customer service department, and then we'll see what we can do to try to rectify that for you.
Okay, this one's back to dogs again. I've been several times riding a bus, you know, the regular San Diego Transit buses, and people come on with these little yappy dogs. They see my dog, and they're barking their head off.
And the driver's under the impression that they have to let these people on. You know, they asked if it was a service dog. The person said yes, but it was like one of those little Papillon type things. And the person even said, oh, well, it's barking because it wasn't spayed. And so me and a friend, well, we were in a ruckus-raising mood that night. So we sided with the bus driver, and she was just so tickled pink. Somebody sided with her. And we said, we think that was any legitimate service dog. So what are you teaching your drivers on to handle, you know, they ask the question, is this a service dog? The person says yes. It's most likely in what they call emotional support dogs, which I think will not be allowed after the new regs go into effect, if I understood them correctly. How are they trained to handle somebody getting on with their dog wants to lunge and attack and bark at our guide dogs, and my dog's laying quietly under the seat? So I know what they taught.
Yeah, and again, we just specifically, it was just coincidental because I had no idea I was coming to speak at this conference when we put it together, but this year we specifically trained our operators on how to deal with service animals. And you're absolutely right, the ADA does not allow us, like I was saying, does not allow us to confront someone. And people are smart enough to know if we ask if that's a service animal, if they simply reply yes, then we are obligated to allow them to ride the bus. The one exception to that is if they do not maintain control of that animal. We are then allowed to request that they control that animal, or we can then call for a supervisor to come and escort that animal off the bus. Our operators are allowed to do that. Again, they have been trained. If you run into that as an issue or a problem, certainly encourage that operator to call for a supervisor. But the key is we really don't want to create a confrontation. Regardless of the situation, it doesn't help anyone to create a confrontation on the bus where someone could be embarrassed or it gets out of hand.
I have a question for us, partially sighted, low vision individuals who are in wheelchairs that are trying to board the trolley. Sometimes we need the help of the operators, and with some of the new cars, they have that button that you have to press special to get the ramp to come down. I was wondering if the operators are trained to help if we're in a wheelchair with our white cane. Thank you.
And you were referring to the trolley and using the ramp?
Right. Assistance getting on the trolley with low vision with a wheelchair.
We only train the bus operators, and it's a little complicated in MTS. The trolley is a whole separate division with its own training. But in general, I think once they make the conversion to just the low floor trolleys, you're going to see less and less interaction with the operators because they won't need to operate the lifts any longer to board people in wheelchairs. But certainly if you need assistance, you can motion to that train operator and they should be able to provide that assistance to you.
Okay, I guess we have to wind it up, guys. I want to thank both Michael and Johnny for coming
And I'm sure because if you want to hang out, I'm sure they'll be available for questions just kind of outside here. I'm sure they'd be happy to answer them, and hopefully you've learned something that you could take back to your areas too. And who knows, maybe they'll learn something from you. So I don't know. We can all learn from each other. But I want to thank everybody for coming today.
You know, if you wanted to talk to the people from the transit system, feel free to come up and talk to them. Go to our booth, general session. And I hope everybody has a good afternoon.